When her body was finally discovered, he had accidentally left his gun next to her. He, of course, said it had been stolen from him. At first, there was no reason to suspect that they knew each other, but her friends say they turned down rides and drugs from him on multiple occasions. This is the story of Susana Morales, the Georgia teenager who was murdered by a cop who wouldn't take no for an answer. Hi friends, I'm Katie, and this is Katie Does Crime. Thank you for joining me for the first time if you're new here, and hello to the usual rapscallions and reprobates. Please consider subscribing or joining me on Patreon if you'd like to hear more true crime stories. Susana Morales didn't return to her Norcross, Georgia home on July 26, 2022. That night, she walked from her house to a friend's in light jeans, a yellow spaghetti strap shirt, and white Crocs. She stayed for a few hours and then texted her mom at 9:40 p.m. that she was on her way back, but she never made it home. By 10 p.m., her mom grew concerned. A location app on her phone showed Susana walking on Singleton Road between 10:07 and 10:21 p.m. from Windscape Village Lane. Then 5 minutes later, she was on Oak Lock Trace near Steve Reynolds Boulevard, the opposite direction. She stayed there until her phone no longer registered anything, either because it was turned off or because the battery died. A security camera at a business caught her walking down Singleton Road toward her home, but lost her before whatever sinister thing happened. Her sister called it a little minute between where the camera footage was taken and their home. The 16-year-old was described by her family as always happy, always smiling, with just a little attitude. And I love that they included that little bit of teenage personality in their memory of her. Susana's sister said she had a beautiful singing voice and played guitar and piano. Her family moved from Mexico more than 20 years ago to give their children more opportunities. She was a student at Meadow Creek High School and wanted to be an undercover detective someday. She loved doing her makeup and getting takeout for dinner, and because she was the only daughter left at home, her mom always let her have that little treat. Her boyfriend called her a really uplifting and loving person who was nice to everybody. Police first thought Susana must just be another runaway teen and said they didn't believe she was abducted or was being held against her will. They said they didn't think she was in any specific danger. But 2 weeks later, they were asking anyone with information to come forward and help. Susana's family didn't believe for a second that she had chosen to leave. Her sister said, "My sister, she will never do that to us. Never. She has never done this. She has never left the house. She would always answer our call and let us know where she is. If she's coming home, when she's coming home, this never happens."
It's frustration of not knowing where she is, not knowing anything, you know? Like, all I ask sometimes is just, I just want to know where she's at so I can get her.
For more than 1 month, Jasmine Morales has been praying for her younger sister's safe return home.
Something happened in between the place that we got the camera footage from and our neighborhood, and that's like a minute apart. So something happened in that little minute, and we just haven't been able to figure out what happened. So we know that she's not out there because she wants to be. She will never do that. I mean, it's been over a month. It would have been like, so she would have contacted like her boyfriend, my mom, me, or at least.
Jasmine says she's followed up on every single lead too, even driving out of state for some. And in the state, she's organized rallies in the hopes of getting one step closer.
I can't even believe that she's gone because it's unreal. We feel her close. We don't feel her far away.
In the meantime, Jasmine holds her newest tattoo close to her heart as their last conversation was about this butterfly.
She was like, "Is that for me?" And I was just like, "If you want it to be for you, it can be." And she's like, "Well, in my mind, it is." And I was like, "Okay, then it's for you."
In December, almost half a year later, Susana's mom posted a video in Spanish on social media saying, "Sweet daughter, this message is for you. I want to tell you that I love you. I am here waiting for you with all of my heart. Your room will always be waiting for you." She said she didn't want to leave the house for fear that Susana would come home and find it empty. The next month, in January 2023, police announced that Susana might have gotten into a car on her walk home. That would explain how the surveillance video they had showed her walking one way, and then 5 minutes later, her location app showed her on a street the other way. It was basically the only clue they had. But then in early February, Susana's body was discovered outside Decula, near Drowning Creek, a morose name but a very appropriate place to find human remains. A passerby called it in, saying he thought he saw a body in the woods, and then led police to her. It was more than 20 miles from where she'd last been seen. Susanna had been left out in the open, naked and exposed to the elements for some time, so the medical examiner's office had their work cut out for them. They couldn't tell the cause of death yet, but the dental records confirmed that it was indeed Susanna. Her mom said, "I know where she is now. It's not the same anguish anymore. Now it's just the pain of not knowing how much she suffered before she died. It's a pain that will never go away." Shockingly, it only took a few days for an arrest to be made. At this point, police weren't even saying how Susanna died, but they thought 22-year-old Miles Bryant had something to do with it. There was no known relationship between the two, but the arrest warrant said he lived in close proximity to her, and he was a police officer. Emphasis on the word was. He was fired from the Doraville Police Department the day he was arrested. They issued a statement saying, "Our prayers rest with the family and friends of Susanna Morales and everyone else affected by this tragedy." The police chief said Bryant's termination wasn't based on any evidence, but that he didn't want the department sitting under a cloud during the investigation. But then his tune quickly changed. Later that month, the same police chief said they didn't know how or why Susanna was killed, but they knew Bryant did it. He was charged with one count of concealing the death of another and one count of false report of a crime. He was denied bond, the judge calling him a danger to the community. Authorities believed he had dumped Susanna's body sometime between 10:20 p.m. and 1:40 a.m. after Susanna texted her mom to say she was coming home. He then claimed that his truck had been broken into and his wallet and gun had been stolen. More on this later, but that's the false report of a crime part of the arrest warrant. Susanna's family believed all along that the police had acted too slowly. They thought it could have made a difference if more urgency was placed on finding Susanna. But her sister said it kind of made sense now, with Bryant being a cop. She said, "It sucks that it took so long, but I guess him being an officer has something to do with that." Gwinnett County Police had been handling the investigation, but they'd been updating the Doraville PD, where Bryant worked, regularly. So there's a good chance he knew there were no leads in the case for a good 6 months. Neighbors said he'd been acting very normal leading up to his arrest, just smiling and living his life with his girlfriend as if he'd done nothing wrong.
Now those who live by Bryant are in disbelief.
It's hard to just put my mind around it right now, that this is the person that's been living over here in this complex. Like, what?
The resident asked us not to disclose her identity out of fear of retaliation, but says while she did not know Bryant personally, he has introduced himself several times as a police officer who also moonlighted as security at the complex.
But it turns out that as a police officer, Bryant had a few problems. He was only on the force for 21 months, and during that time, he was reprimanded multiple times and accused of trying to break into a woman's home. In terms of the reprimands, one time he didn't submit a missing persons report within the mandated 2-hour limit. Another time, he says he jokingly approached a fellow officer as if he had a gun under his hoodie while they were both off duty, but the other officer didn't recognize him at first and didn't get the joke. As for the woman who accused him of trying to enter her home, one newspaper reports that they were childhood friends and that he only knocked on her door and tried the knob. He said she had made a questionable social media post and he just wanted to check on her. So I'm not trying to downplay what he did to Susanna, but when the news first started reporting on him, it didn't seem like he had a real history of bad behavior. Bryant's former employer called him positive, dependable, and a hard worker. He'd been in the National Guard since 2018 and a jailer at the Forsyth County Sheriff's Office for over a year starting in March 2020. In late February, it was reported that the night Susanna disappeared, she had been visiting a friend who lived in the Sterling Glen Apartments, which is the same complex where Bryant lived and worked as a security guard. And when they found Susanna's body, his gun was discovered nearby. As I mentioned before, the day after she didn't return home, he made a report that someone broke into his truck and stole his personal gun. Authorities assume that he dropped it while trying to hide the body and had to figure out how to explain why it might later show up in some suspicious place. That must be the reason that he asked that no detectives bother looking for it, a thing that they found very weird at the time. But of course, they had no reason to suspect anything back then. And now, the thing he'd probably been worried about when he made the false report had come true. His gun had shown up somewhere very inconvenient for him. As soon as the authorities linked the gun to Bryant, they began surveilling him. The police chief said, "It's a shame that Miles was able to get in the ranks of law enforcement, but I am happy with the department's response in terms of bringing him to justice." Bryant was indicted in March on counts of malice murder, felony murder, kidnapping, and falsely reporting a crime. This same month, he was also charged with first-degree burglary charges related to that incident where he tried the doorknob of his childhood friend. Like I said, when it was first reported, the newspaper made it sound like he had been there one time, and he said he was just trying to make sure she was okay. But it turns out it was a bit more sinister than that. She says he had tried to reconnect with her, but she wasn't interested. Then a neighbor shared Ring doorbell camera footage of him tugging on her doorknob on several occasions. And one time when she wasn't there, someone actually broke in, damaging her front door. One time, Bryant texted her that he would be in the area later if she was home, when the camera footage showed that he'd already just been there, checking her door.
At her Snellville apartment last year. She believes this Ring video her neighbor gave her is Bryant as he lurked around her door, trying her knob, wearing a hood on his head. She says he even broke in one time when she was not home.
Well, my neighbor told me that she saw Miles coming to our community and listening to my door when I wasn't home and just trying to see if I was home, messing with my doorknob and stuff. She told me, and once she showed me the video of him, it was all alarming.
She says she feared for her life and reported it to multiple police departments, but the one employing Bryant only gave him a stern talking to, and the other admits that they never followed up. She wonders if Susanna could have been saved had Bryant been pursued in her case. At a May bond hearing, the deputy chief DA said Bryant's cell phone put him at the place where Susanna's body was found in the early morning hours after she disappeared. Bryant said sure, he'd been out driving that night after an argument with his girlfriend, whom he made two calls to around that time. But after the murder, he also allegedly called Susanna's friend while blocking his phone number to ask her what the police knew. He also allegedly made a web search for how long does it take a body to decompose. And on top of all of those things directly related to Susanna's murder, Bryant also just appeared to be a general all-around creep. Prosecutors referred to Bryant's long series of deviant behavior when asking the court to deny him bond. And yeah, it is a long series. He was accused of watching his girlfriend on hidden cameras, keeping a stash of women's underwear in their house, breaking into four high school classmates' houses, stealing underwear from one of them, and illegally using a state database to get personal information about a victim. When his girlfriend confronted him about the stash of underwear being kept in their home, he said they were just evidence and thanked her for finding them. The DA said, "This defendant utilized his badge, his place of authority, in order to access women's information. He is a danger to women in this community." He was denied bond. In January 2024, he was indicted on an additional count of a word I can't say on YouTube, an assault of a sexual nature of Susanna. He pleaded not guilty. That April, Susanna's family sued the apartment complex where Bryant worked, saying the property manager should have known about his problems at the police department through a background check and should have never hired him. They said the complex should have known he was suspended from work once and reprimanded other times. It's not clear, though, if those incidents occurred before or after he was hired at the apartment complex. Susanna's family said it doesn't matter. There should be a system in place to protect people from dangerous residents. As of the recording of this video, that case is still pending. Bryant's trial began in June 2024, with his lawyer saying, "You don't have to like my client. In fact, in the conclusion of this trial, you are going to think he is the most callous, uncaring coward you have ever seen. However, he is not guilty of the murder." Her thinking was that it was going to come out that Bryant had kept Susanna's family wondering about her for 6 months, and the jury was not going to like that. But there was no hard evidence he had actually murdered her, so maybe she had a shot. Bryant's now ex-girlfriend testified that they had indeed gotten into a fight the night Susanna disappeared. She noticed scratches on his truck later and a cracked mirror. An ex-friend, the one whose apartment he tried to break into over and over, called him a stalker on the stand. And in kind of a shocking revelation, Susanna's best friend said the two turned down a ride from Bryant once before. They laughed about it and didn't talk about it again. Another friend said Bryant once offered them alcohol and edibles at the apartment complex, even though he knew they were underage. So Susanna did kind of know him, even if she didn't necessarily want to. One officer who questioned Bryant about his gun being found near Susanna's body testified that Bryant became nervous immediately, shaking uncontrollably and breathing heavily. He said they tried to make the police interview seem casual, but the questions made it pretty obvious that he was being considered a suspect.
Miles.
Yes.
This is where we're at, okay? And I'm gonna be completely honest with you. Your phone records are there. You made 2 phone calls 3 hours after she's last seen on camera. Mm-hmm. And your gun is found right there as well, right, with your phone, where those 2 phone calls are placed. Mm-hmm. Help me out.
Tell me, I understand where this is coming from.
No, I'm saying, yeah. I know you did, just help me out a little bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you're thinking, but no.
What would you think?
You think that's what you do?
No, I said, what would you think?
Oh, no, I get that part, but now my heart's beating, it's like, whoa, you know? Mm-hmm. I get that. That's almost like, hey, you know, stuff like that. But no, I've never been like that, you know? Mm-hmm. I would never do something like that.
Later in the interview shown to the jury, one detective tells Bryant, "We aren't painting you. You painted yourself. We can just read your body language and know you did this. I was just hoping to give this family some closure. You don't represent this badge at all, or this country." Bryant replied simply, "Yes, I do." The chief medical examiner testified that a cause of death could never be determined because the body had so badly decomposed in the woods. There were simply no more tests she could do.
If I don't have demonstrable physical trauma to the remains, I will tend to use the term undetermined, and then will specifically say why. In this case, I called the cause of death undetermined due to decomposition with skeletonization. I believe if I had had the intact body, I could have come up with a specific cause of death, but I'm limited based on what I have. The body is too decomposed. All I have is a skeleton because the circumstances, again, young female, this isolated area where it's far removed from where she was last known to be alive, and no personal effects, no clothing. As a medical examiner with 30 years of experience, if I were to see an intact individual at this type of a scene, first thing I'm going to think of is some type of homicidal violence, specifically some type of asphyxial type component, strangulation, suffocation, chest compression, things of that nature. Because if you have a nude individual, nude or partially nude, that better be, as a medical examiner, that better be one of the first things you're thinking about. And so the fact that she doesn't have any skeletal trauma does not exclude that.
A police lieutenant who searched for Susanna said he neglected his family because it meant so much to him to find her. He wanted to do everything he could for Susanna's sister, Jasmine, especially because he has a Hispanic wife and a daughter of the same age.
I actually neglected my family because I made sure that I went hunting for her, and it meant a lot to me. So,
walk us through a little bit of your efforts.
Let's see. I would, anytime any information would come to Jasmine, I would immediately go and look. And obviously, it was after the time frame. There were many days where I would check in at work and I would immediately go down to Norcross and just stake out every area possible. I was very driven by it, and I would say more obsessed with the situation that I would even do it on my own time, because I just, every time I see my daughter in her face, I saw Jasmine.
A police detective said that not only did Brian's work phone and personal cell phone place him at the location where Susanna's body was dumped, but he also conducted extensive online research about her disappearance, along with, of course, his searches about how long it takes a body to decompose and how a body is ID'd using dental records. In the days after the murder, he searched for his license plate in a system that automatically captures photos of them, the idea being that he was trying to see if his vehicle was recorded in the area where he dumped the body. The detective said that in police interviews, he never asked how Susanna died, because in her thinking, he already knew. In her closing argument, Brian's lawyer could only say that there was no direct evidence of murder. Yes, he lied about being in the woods. Yes, Susanna was in his vehicle. Yes, he was trying to conceal her death. But did he murder her? No one could know. Hey, maybe she just overdosed.
The only things we know for certain, she was in the car, truck, I don't know why we always default to car, with Miles. We do know that Miles left her in the woods. We don't know if she was unconscious at that time or if she was dead. We don't know that he did anything to her to cause that.
Now, tell me if I've missed something, but I don't think we knew before this moment that they were admitting to Susanna being in Brian's truck. I don't think that had come up before at trial. I think his lawyer just randomly admitted to it. But that's so confusing to me that I feel like there must be some admission in his police interview or something that I'm missing. But I also couldn't find any news articles that talk about it, which makes me think no one else knew what to think of it. My understanding is that police confiscated a sheet from Brian's vehicle, but that DNA wasn't found on it. And the prosecution said you wouldn't necessarily expect DNA if it was an asphyxiation versus, say, a stabbing. So I don't know why the defense would suddenly admit that she was in the truck. You'll have to let me know what you think. The prosecution said that even though Bryant claimed his wallet and gun were stolen out of his truck, he never had his driver's license replaced. The theft was clearly made up to explain why his gun might later be found near Susanna's body. The prosecutor laid out lie after lie that Bryant told. He called Bryant a predator and a monster with a badge. He said Bryant is what goes bump in the night.
He is moving. He is not sitting in his vehicle. As Susanna is walking home at 10 p.m., he gets out of his vehicle and he is walking around. He is a liar. He did not stay in his vehicle. No one was in my truck. That's a lie. My license was stolen. That's a lie. I called police when I found my wallet. No, he didn't. Detective Carter told you, there isn't a single call to the police department documenting that he ever reported he found his wallet. Moreover, he said in the interview, well, I lost Officer Merkley's card. I don't know what happened to it. They found it in his truck when they searched it, right there. Officer Merkley's business card with the case number for the stolen report. He didn't lose it. He didn't want to call. He didn't call. That's a lie. I didn't dump her body. That's a lie. I wouldn't jeopardize my career. Obviously a lie. I didn't throw her phone out of the window. That's a lie. I didn't make a false report. That's a lie. I didn't know that girl. He obviously is lying. He picked her up that night and killed her. I've never seen her. I had nothing to do with this. Nothing happened between us. I don't know where she lived. I wasn't in front of her house. Yes, he was. His vigilant records show him parked right the next door of her house. Stopped, stationary, parked a month after her disappearance in front of her mother's house. As her mother still didn't know where she was, he is out there, stopped in front of their house. And they told you when they testified, we saw a black truck, you know, that would come back and around there, and he's parked there. My personal phone was dead. Why'd you use your work phone? Well, my personal phone was dead. Garbage. It's a lie. It wasn't dead. He used it all night long. It maps him everywhere. He's calling people on it. That's a lie. I didn't take her clothes. Where are they? They're not with her. He disposed of her clothes. He threw them away. Did something with them to obscure the crime, not be found. I didn't try to break into Alicia's house. That's a lie. I wasn't stalking Alicia. That's a lie. I didn't hide my face. We just watched the video. Police officer, military man, walking past her apartment with his hand like this over his face, trying to open her door. It's lie after lie after lie, but yet he sits there and they are asking you to believe them now.
In June 2024, Miles Bryant was found guilty of 4 of the 5 counts against him, including malice murder and felony murder. The jury only deliberated for about 5 hours.
State of Georgia versus Miles Bryant. Indictment number 24B00156-4. Count 1, malice murder. We, the jury, found the defendant guilty. Count 2, felony murder. We, the jury, find the defendant guilty. Count 3, kidnapping. We, the jury, find the defendant guilty. Count 4, criminal attempt to commit. We, the jury, find the defendant not guilty. Count 5, false report of a crime. We, the jury, find the defendant guilty.
The only thing Bryant was found not guilty of was the assault, which couldn't really be proven with a decomposed body. He appeared to calmly take notes as the verdict was read. He was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole, but he maintains his innocence, and his lawyers almost immediately filed an appeal. They said the jury's verdict was illegal and inconsistent, and that there was no evidence that pointed to Bryant's guilt. Now, I don't know about you, but there was more than enough circumstantial evidence for me. I guess we might never know what happened that night, why Miles Bryant would kill a 16-year-old he didn't really know at all. I wonder if the fight with his girlfriend already had him in a rage and it was too much when Susanna turned him down for a ride yet again. Or I wonder if he used his badge to actually convince her to get into the truck. I think that as a teenager, I might have trusted a police officer, even one I only knew from around the neighborhood, to, you know, not murder me and dump my body. But she was so close to home that I think there's a better chance that he took her against her will. Either scenario makes me sick. Susanna's family is speaking out about how her case was handled. They want more for other missing teens, for officers to take these cases seriously instead of automatically calling them runaways. I hope lessons were learned. Thank you for tuning into my podcast episode. I'm just a true crime fan like you are, and I really appreciate you taking a chance on me. Please subscribe and tell a friend if you like spending this time together. You can also find me on YouTube in the flesh by searching Katie Does Crime.